Welcome to Women Made New. I'm your host, Crystalina Everett. Thank you for joining me. So today's show is going to be a little different. I'm going to be interviewing my husband, Jason Everett, and we are going to be talking about the other ministry that we run together, Chastity Project, and also answer some of the listeners' questions that were sent in. So without further ado, here's my husband, Jason. I am here with my hubby, Jason Everett.
Thanks for having me on the show.
This is a bit weird and strange for me here, sitting here interviewing my husband. So we do interviews together. We do them separate. But for me to interview him, it's a whole new world. So this will be fun.
Yeah.
Okay. So for those of you that don't know Jason or aren't as familiar, I just want to give us a little bit of a background on the other ministry besides Women Made New that we have. And it's Chastity Project, and you can find it at chastity.com. And why don't you tell everybody about the other ministry we have going?
It started, we've been up and around for about 21 years now doing it. The genesis of it was when I was in college. I led a lot of high school retreats, and on these retreats, the teens would open up to me about all the struggles they're going through, and I just realized so much of the suffering in their life had to do with the absence of chastity, and if that one piece in their life was in the right place, just how much hurt and heartbreak could have been avoided, but they just weren't getting any formation. And at the same time, I did 3 years of sidewalk counseling at college, basically talking to women as they're approaching their abortion appointment to give them different alternatives, options, adoption, whatever. In doing this ministry, I really began to feel late. Like, why am I meeting this woman 45 minutes before she has an abortion? Why couldn't I have met this woman when she was 15 or 16 years old? Because maybe if she heard about chastity then, she never would have ended up in this difficult situation today with this guy. And so I realized to save the most unborn babies, we got to swim upstream to the root of the issue, which is unchastity. And at the same time, I was reading St. John Paul II's book, Love and Responsibility, and I saw, wait a minute, like, this is the antidote in my hands of what I'm seeing on these retreats with the Catholic teens, of what I'm seeing at the abortion clinic, like this understanding of chastity as this virtue that frees you to love. And so just started to eat up everything that John Paul II wrote, and then was hired by Catholic Answers right out of college and started promoting chastity, working under their umbrella. And it was through doing those chastity talks that Crystalina and I met, and we began speaking together. She came to visit me in San Diego, and I said, hey, I got a chastity talk to you at a high school tomorrow. You want to get on stage and, I don't know, give the talk with me? And she's like, oh, I don't know. I haven't ever done that before. I'm like, oh, you'd be great. And so she prayed about it and came on stage with me the next day, just shared for maybe 5 or 10 minutes. I mean, she just knocked him dead. I mean, the kids are coming up afterwards, hugging her and crying and dumping their boyfriends. I thought, like, we make a pretty good team. So we continued to travel and speak as a dating and engaged couple. And then now, 20 some odd years later, it's bloomed into what it has bloomed. And I think that's largely the fruit of how many people pray for our ministry. And it's through their intercession that I think it's been able to be fruitful.
So I actually have a question. I think the viewers would be very interested in knowing.
Oh, boy.
So how did you know, for those that are discerning, what it is they want to do with the rest of their life, or they feel God is calling them in one way or another? How did you know this is what you wanted to do?
I think the world has so many different aches and pains and hurts, and God has given to different individuals different passions. And I think your purpose is where your passion and the world's ache collide. And so my passion was just working with the young people, God's plan for human love and sexuality, and then the brokenness that we see in the world, those two things fit together like puzzle pieces. And so it's not a matter of like, I got to be like Mother Teresa, and I got to be like this saint or that saint. Like, none of us can fit into that, because sainthood isn't about being put into some mold. It's about being who God created you to be as an individual. So, maybe your passion is working with the homeless, or pro-life ministry, or apologetics, or helping people heal from this or that. Just, you got to begin by looking inwardly. Like, what are the passions that God has given you? Those are his gifts to you. And now, how can you use those for his glory? And it doesn't need to be on a stage. It doesn't need to be behind a podcast microphone. I mean, if you're homebound and suffering from illness, just offering up your suffering with love puts you on the front lines of the church, that intercessory power of redemptive suffering. But no matter where you're at in your life, God can use your situation for the good. And so just going into prayer and into silence and seeing where he wants to put you to work in the vineyard.
You know, and I think maybe some listeners out there, maybe your whole life, you feel like you're really not doing what you know you were supposed to be doing. And you're taking a good, hard look at yourself, thinking, well, I'm not really that happy. I've always just kind of done what I was supposed to because I was told to, or this is what I thought was right. But deep down, you feel like there's a different call on your life, or God's asking you to do something more or to change things. And that can be really scary. And sometimes you don't want to do that. And it's really hard. But if God is asking you to do something, it obviously is important to have the courage to do that, because you never know what age, it doesn't matter what God's needing you to go off and do. I mean, I never thought I would be a host to a radio show. My goodness.
Yeah, you know, and God's just going to keep bugging you about it anyway, so you might as well just cave in and do it.
So true. So Jason and I have, for those of you that don't know, we have 8 children, and I have my 2 babies in heaven. So we have 10 children total. And I would go around and I would speak with Jason, and it was unbelievable. And then after we got married and we started having children, which was pretty much immediately, I didn't travel with him as much, but we're still able to run Chastity Project at home, and I'm able to do some things. But I just thought it would be fun for him to come on the show and just answer a couple of questions that we'll do later. Now, with everything going on with COVID right now, Jason, and just our entire world changing and certain people being on lockdown and social distancing, are people asking you a lot of questions that you're seeing of, goodness, how do they move forward in dating or relationships or finding that other person, or what do they do?
Yeah, I think this whole coronavirus quarantine thing has hit people in different ways, almost depending upon your temperament. And what I mean by that is, you know, I tend to be, even though we do all these extroverted talks, I'm more of an introvert, meaning I kind of recharge in isolation. And so if it's like, hey, social isolation, I'm like, hey, bring it on. You know, I like that, and the solitude and the quiet. Whereas if someone tends to be more extroverted and relationship oriented, this could be torture on them. And so what's happening, especially in the world of social media, they're recommending young people different challenges like, hey, text your ex. Meaning like, if you're bored, just like send a text message to that guy that you dumped 6 months ago and just see how they're doing. I'm like, hello, red flag, dumb idea. But, you know, a lot of times some of the worst decisions we make are during states of desolation of, I need to fill this emptiness, this void I'm going through. And so all of this isolation socially and relationally brings a unique challenge in young people's lives, where they're maybe binging on social media or falling into habits of pornography. And you got to step back, like, where's this coming from? Like, often it's when we're bored, we're lonely, we're angry, we're stressed out, we're tired. Well, a lot of people are feeling those things. And during those seasons of desolation, temptation seems so much more alluring. It's almost like if you fast on from meat on Friday, and then you drive by a Taco Bell, and you're like, well, that smells really good. You know, it's like, no, it really doesn't. But it's just, you just haven't had meat in like 12 hours, and all of a sudden you're, you know, dying for it. And it's the same way relationally speaking. And so I think what the young people need to watch out for, one thing is kind of a slingshot effect, meaning we have had all these restrictions of like, okay, you can't be around each other 6 feet away or whatever. What happens when all this is lifted and guys and girls get to see each other as much as they used to be? Is there going to be a bit of a slingshot effect where they try to make up for missed time by becoming more physically involved than they should have been? And so we've got to step back a little bit and just make sure that, you know, when it comes to our relationships, check the purity of your intentions at the beginning and the middle and at the end. You know, are my intentions pure, or am I using this person physically or emotionally? And so, you know, coronavirus for sure is throwing a curveball everybody's way. But if we are feeling stressed out or bored or lonely, we just need to make sure we're seeking out true consolations that come from God, good family, exercise, friends, and not the false consolations that'll lead us deeper into despair.
So if a person is struggling with just lust or different vices or whatever it is that they're having a hard time with right now, what will they find at chastity.com?
Well, we don't take a kind of shame, fear-based, you know, wagging a finger in your face type approach of just like, oh, well, you did that, you're bad. And, you know, so we need to get you into this sin management program. It's like, no, like we got to look at the roots of what's going on here. On my last podcast episode, I had shared that Matt Fred and I are about to publish a book for guys on how to break free from pornography. And in reading and researching in preparation for the book, I read this book called, Unwanted. And it's an evangelical counselor. And what he pointed out is that a lot of times we fall back into just bad decisions, whether it's pornography or any unwanted sexual habit or behavior, because we're not listening to our desires. And what he meant by that is a lot of times our sexual struggles, he says, are like a roadmap or a pathway toward our sexual healing. And what he's pointing out is like, if you're struggling in this area or that area, listen to that. Maybe there's some really deep unmet needs that you really need to meet in a healthy way. And until those deeper wounds are addressed, you can be living out of those wounds. And so if you've experienced sexual brokenness through abuse, you start to identify with your wounds and not just hide in sexual behavior to numb the hurt, but recreate the hurt because it's what you believe you deserve because that's who you are. And so really going into these deeper layers of identity, you know, who are you? Are you the porn addict? Are you the this addict or that addict? No, you know, you're a person made in the image and likeness of God, created by love and for love. But we've been marinated in a culture that offers us lust as this counterfeit of love. But sometimes if we can just sit still long enough to look at our deeper aches and our wounds, then instead of living out of them, we can encounter Christ in them. And he can make us whole.
And I want to encourage you listeners, if you have those deep wounds, and I've said this in the past on previous shows, go to get counseling now if you can. Get counseling. And so easy in your home now. A lot of the counselors, Catholic counselors, are doing that telehealth or telecounseling. And you can get everything you need in the privacy of your own home and start a healing process. Because you're going to either deal with it now or you're going to deal with it later. And it's better that you're not dealing with those things with your husband, with your children. Just it's going to spew out on every aspect of your life, if you like it or not, because that's exactly what happened to me. And it's better you just take care of it head on. And I've seen wonders in people's lives that have gone to counseling and really have healed thoroughly. And they live beautiful, unbelievable lives, regardless of this just dark, broken past that they have. The beauty that God creates in their lives is unbelievable. So don't ever underestimate what God wants to do in your life, because it's pretty powerful.
Yeah, and so regardless of what you may be going through, you know, Crystal had asked, what are they going to find at chastity.com? If you're a parent, we've got books, resources, articles on how to talk to your teens about this subject. Whether you're a teen, young adult, college student, single person, married person, chastity is a virtue that applies to all of us. And so we've got literally hundreds of videos, hundreds of articles. You can just click on the topic. Well, I've got questions about homosexuality and the church's teachings on that. You just click the button there, and we've got blogs and videos, all kinds of stuff to help you understand it more deeply, and then also to help you spread that message to other people. We've got dozens and dozens of resources and all the books and all the CDs. Everything is $3 or less on the website, because we just want people to get these things boxes at a time, share them with your youth group, share them with the RCIA program, the CCD. Because like, imagine if we just heard this message. I just wish I heard it in high school. I mean, imagine how different so many of the listeners' lives would be if we heard this in effect in time. And although it's never too late, if we can just bring people the cure before the disease comes along, it can avoid a lot of hurt in people's lives.
And it's hard having those uncomfortable talks also with your own children, or you don't know exactly what to say to them, or you don't know certain things going on, that we have the answers there. And just the books that you can give them if you are uncomfortable talking about those things with your children.
Yeah, and it could be awkward. I mean, a friend of mine, his daughter came to him just a little, I don't know, she was like 10 years old or whatever. I'm like, Daddy, I want to be like the Virgin Mary. And he's like, oh, that's great. She said, that's right. I want to get pregnant before I'm married. And Dad's like, oh, no. Wait, hold on. Rewind. So, you know, there could be those awkward moments. But hey, you know, it's not so much about having a talk. It's about having a lifelong conversation and having the confidence to do that.
So what is the one of the main things, Jason, that you're finding that people seem to be struggling with these days?
Well, I think the biggest thing is their phones. I mean, they wake up. It's the first thing they check in with. They don't check in with God. They're not doing morning prayer. First thing is that screen. It's the last thing they see before they go to bed. It's the first thing they see when they wake up. And, you know, I remember seeing on ESPN a while back, this female college student athlete, beautiful woman, attractive, popular, straight A student, athlete, everything, committed suicide. And they interviewed a lot of the other students on campus, like, well, where did this come from? And one girl's like, I have no idea. I mean, she looks so happy on Instagram. I can't imagine where this would have come from. But like that line says it all. Like they thought what you see on social media is reality. And especially like to you parents, maybe you got teenage kids, especially teenage daughters at home. Don't let them go to bed with the cell phones in their bedroom, because what your daughter's doing before, when the lights go out, that phone goes on and she starts scrolling through Instagram, through Tumblr, through Twitter, Snapchat, you name it, and kind of comparing her life to everybody else's life and their hair and their bodies and their relationships and their friends. And everybody's filtered existence is compared to her unfiltered existence. And she just goes to bed feeling less than. Meanwhile, the boy's over in his bedroom scrolling through who knows what. And it's just like, you know, that stuff, I mean, technology is a blessing. It really is. But it can be a curse as well if we don't know what to do with it. And so we got to put those phones on lockdown. You should know the passwords. That thing should have a curfew. It should be going to bed in your room, parents, at nighttime. And so to me, the gateway for so many struggles right now is that phone. Kids are struggling with gender issues. A lot of it's from the phone. I mean, a lot of it is like, hey, I don't feel like I fit in with the other girls at the school, and the things that they're interested in, I'm not interested in. But then I get on Instagram and I get on Tumblr and I read about on Tumblr how there's 500 different genders to pick from. Literally 500 plus genders. And I can really relate to this one. Whereas if these kids didn't have the unfettered social media access and phones like, you know, 20 years ago, they may struggle with gender dysphoria or social issues. But the lighter fluid that's poured onto that fire through modern technology, when it's not filtered, is more dangerous than ever. And so I would say if there's anything where the battlefront needs to be looked at, it's the technology. Because a lot of the kids out there, you parents, God bless you, you're on a frontier of parenthood, but some of you don't know how to open an email attachment and your kid's like hacking into the Pentagon's website for fun after school. Like, catch up, folks. And so if you want to know how to catch up, just one real simple tip on how to do that. If you text the word safe to the number 66866. So all you gotta do is type in 66866, like it's a phone number, and then in the text message field, just write the word SAFE and then click send. You'll get back a week of free videos that are only like 4 minutes long each through email that are just gonna walk you through how to set up safety on your kids' phones, on their tablets, on YouTube, Covenant Eyes, all this kind of great stuff. Because we're busy parents. We don't have time to figure all this stuff out. But with 3 or 4 minutes a day of videos for 1 week, you'll have the household locked down.
That's perfection. And also, I really wanna encourage you, in this time where we're almost just forced to be home and you're with your kids probably more than you ever have been with the different lockdowns and laws and things going on in all the different states, really take the time to spend quality time with each of your children. I think that's so important. And we have planned these mommy days, these daddy days, and just taking the kids and just focusing and honing in on them. And I'm going to tell you, I am very excited, and I had so much fun with my daughter. I just did my mommy day with her first, and I actually rented a convertible just for the day for us to just go, and I put the top down, and we listened to fun, good music, and put our sunglasses on, and it was just so much fun. And in the end, and we even picked up her little friend for a little bit, and we went out. It was just fun. You know, we dropped her back off, but it was so insightful for me for her to have that time and just open up her heart and to talk to me and just to see where she's at and what's going on and just maybe school's going to be starting, maybe it's not starting, and just all her fears and just everything. We just had these really good, amazing conversations without the distractions of the house or the kids or anything else, and just talking. And it was just so much fun and out of the ordinary. And I'm going to be honest, I had to literally force myself to stop my crazy life of everything pulling at me and just go, which is very difficult. It was, but I did it. And then that night, Jason and I were able to go on a date in my little rented convertible. And it was fun. It was great. You know, and sometimes we just need to step back and we just need to do those out of the ordinary things and get away from the news and the craziness of life and just go and just separate just for a little bit and just hone in on our loved ones, hone in with your husband and do something special and put high heels on and put some lipstick on it and just go and dress up and have fun with each other. And there's going to always be the crazy and the kids and the whatever's going on in the world, but your connection is so important.
Yeah. And so especially if you live in Arizona and it's 114 degrees out, it's a great time to rent a convertible. But no, I mean, what Crystal said, it's true. Like, this time's not going to happen. Like, you have to make it happen. You have to schedule it. It's like the president of our university when I was there, Franciscan University, was Father Michael Scanlon. And, you know, and his big thing was an appointment with God that he recommended to businessmen. Like, you put that in your mm-hmm. BlackBerry, in your schedule. Like, right. Well, I'm sorry, at 9 o'clock, I'm meeting with somebody. And tell your secretary. And it's like, well, nobody's coming in. Like, no, I got a meeting with somebody, the boss. And you carve out that time. And we got to do it with spouses. We got to do it with kids. And, you know, I got to do a daddy day with, you know, Mary too. And I mean, it's just a blast. I mean, we ended up renting a speedboat on the lake. And I was teaching her how to ride a boat for the first time. And we were cliff diving together. We caught a catfish, huge catfish. I mean, he was dead and it was rotten, but we scooped it out of the lake with a net. And we caught it. But like, just, I mean, the time that it's not going to happen to you. It's not going to happen to your marriage. It's not going to happen in parenthood. Like, you have to carve it out. You've got to create that time. But then those end up being some of the best memories.
The best memories, yes.
And then one recommendation for any parents listening, one thing I love to do, whenever your kids say or do something memorable, don't try to remember it. Whip out your cell phone. Type it in a little notepad. Oh, you know, Joseph, age 4, said this today. And I've done that since the kids were born. And like, I literally have like a 30-page single space Microsoft Word document that is absolutely gut-wrenchingly hilarious. That is stuff you think you'll remember, but if you don't put it down, you won't. And so remember these memories, these little quotes that come out of the kids' mouths, the priceless stuff, you know, and savor it. Because I know the nights can be long. I mean, what was it? Yesterday, the baby get us up. I was up at, what was it, night the day before at 5 a.m., didn't get him back till 6:30 or whatever. Like, in the moment, it seems rough, but you're going to save for these later. So make sure to write those little gems down and carve out the time.
Spend the time.
Yeah, what we told the kids the other day, they were moping around after, I'm bored. I'm a bored little pigeon. They're walking circles. Dude, what are you doing? And, and I told them, okay, here we go. I got something for you guys. Why don't you guys act out a play and you can be me and your sister can be mom and you guys play each other's roles? And they're like, oh yeah.
They were into it.
They took off. They got costumes.
It was hilarious. Oh yeah, I whipped all the costumes out. Got the costume bin out.
It was very interesting to see how they see us. So if you're bored, tell your kids to act out how they see you in a play, and I think they'll have quite a bit of fun with that.
And then videotape it. And I mean, they really got into it. They got props. I mean, they even got Jason's, like, they just got, I mean, they really took it seriously. So if your children are bored or just like, you've got to do something to just maybe give them a phone with that they can record on or a camera. So, okay, we are here just to recap with my husband, Jason Evert, which is awesome to have him on. And we are talking about Chastity Project, the ministry that him and I run together, and just all the different things it has to offer, especially with all the different questions and things that especially your teenage kids, college students, things that they're going through and questions you may not be able to answer yourself. So chastity.com, and we have a lot of books and resources as well that you can order just to give them if you don't want to talk to your children about these things. Maybe you can put on a video or give them a book to do it.
I remember one college girl saying once, she said, I completely failed at Chastity because I could never answer the question, why wait? And so we have to give them solid answers, because the young people today are very skeptical because the culture's lied to them a lot. But it's not enough to give them Bible chapter and verse. They need to know, well, why can't I live with my girlfriend before we get married? You know, we need to see if we're compatible. You know, they need solid answers to that. Well, look, are you a guy? Is she a girl? Well, you're not compatible. Okay, there you go. You'll figure that fast enough in marriage. But like, they need solid answers, why sociology backs it up and science. And so at chastity.com, we try to give them not just strong religious arguments, but arguments from the sociological data backing up everything the church has been teaching for centuries.
Okay, we are going to take a quick break now with our friends here at EWTN, and we will be right back with Jason Evert. Okay, we are back, and I'm here with my husband, Jason Evert, here on Women Made New, and I'm your host, Kristalina Evert, and we are actually going to take some questions that were sent to us from the listeners, so we are just going to get right into it. How did you know that the person you're going to marry is your soulmate? How did you know it was your soulmate, Jason?
How could I not know? I think the challenge is that we tend to try to predict destiny by the intensity of our current emotions. Basically, I've never felt this way about somebody before, therefore it must be destiny. And the fact is, sometimes it works out like that, sometimes it doesn't. But in the end, only God knows. And so the entire courtship process, dating, I mean, it's so confusing. It is, because, you know, you walk toward a relationship with all kinds of expectations and hopes of what the other person will possess, and as soon as you see a glimmer of those qualities in the person, the natural reaction is to give them all of those qualities. And so if you hope to find someone who's generous, and then you go on a date with her, and you know, maybe she gives her leftovers to a homeless person, you thinking, oh, this is Mother Teresa. Like, this is the second Mother Teresa here. It's like, hey, you know, cool down a bit. Yeah, she might have some good positive virtues, but a lot of times we tend to exaggerate the positives in the early stage. And so it's hard, because love, in a sense, blinds you a bit. But one of the ways to work through this, to really know, okay, am I making a good choice, or is this just infatuation, is to not go Lone Ranger, not try to discern this all by yourself, because your good friends, your family members can see red flags where you cannot. I remember reading one article that said one of the best indicators of the health of a female's relationship is what the female's female friends think about the guy. Meaning, if your girlfriends are telling you, hey, this guy's got some issues, and you know, look how his past relationships have been, trust your sisters if they have good, holy friendships, because they're not trying to poison the well and try to distance you from him so they can have him. It's because they love you. And we just need to have the humility to see the viewpoints of others. And so if you really want to know if this person's your soulmate or whatever, this is about discerning marriage. Would they make a good spouse? Could you see yourself raising children with this person? Can you see your life without this person? And so, serious questions. Obviously, one of the biggest decisions you could ever make in your life. That's why it's important you not make that decision all by yourself.
And also, I would say, know what it is you want in that other person. Don't just guesstimate and just date and just hope for the best. Just really go in the depths of your heart. Take the matters of your heart seriously and know what it is you want, and not to compromise that or lower those standards because, oh, well, he's so cute, or he smells good, or I don't want to be alone. It's like, no, I know what I want. And if they don't have those basic qualities enough, they can be friends, that's fine, but you're going to end up being disappointed.
Yeah, and this question ties into the next one that came in, which is it all right to have expectations for your future spouse? Like saying, I want someone who's gentle and funny, or should we just be open to whoever and whatever the person is? I would say to that person, like, yeah, it's healthy to have some positive expectations. You want a guy who's gentle and funny? I don't think that's too much to ask for. I think what is too much to ask for is settling for a guy who's neither one of those things and thinking you're going to have a happy marriage. You know, I want someone who's not gentle and, you know, boring and not and overly serious. I mean, what kind of relationship is that really going to be? And so God, I think, puts these reasonable desires upon your heart because they're good. and that he wants to fulfill them, you know, in his timing. And so I would say, don't be, you know, afraid to have those hopes and dreams. You know, we have to obviously be realistic, you know, that, you know, I want this guy to be, you know, 6'2" and blue eyes and have a foreign accent and own a chocolate factory and be a millionaire. Okay, look, you have to be realistic. He doesn't have to be 6'2". 5'6" is perfectly fine. That's what my opinion, because that's what Crystal found in me. And so you obviously you want to be realistic, but these things, gentle, funny, yeah, put that on your list and look for a guy with those qualities. And it's not just selfish for you to want those things. You're going to be giving your kids a happier home to grow up in, you know, if there's that level of compatibility. And yeah, you know what? Incompatibilities, they're going to come to the surface. That's inevitable. But if that's really what energizes you to be around a guy who's just fun, laid back, and gentle, maybe you need that stuff for your sake, because maybe you've been in environments that weren't so gentle, not so funny, and you realize how toxic that could be. And so I would say God put those desires on your heart for good reason, and you should stick with those desires and keep your standards as high as heaven.
And you also don't want to date someone in hopes that they're going to change, because they may not change and it may just get worse. And you're just dating the illusion that you have in your mind of these hopes and dreams that are never going to happen. And just always listen to your heart. And if saying it's not good, this isn't good, I need to leave, I need to break up, I need whatever, you need to just do that, or else you're just asking for a world of hurt.
Yeah, and the second part of the question, or should we just be open to whoever and whatever the person is? No.
I
mean, a gutter on the side of a road is open to whatever and whoever floats down the stream. You know, you need to be more discerning about what floats downstream to you, because you're going to have to say no maybe 100 times to the counterfeit before you get to say yes to the real thing. And if you're too afraid to say no out of fear that, well, maybe the real one won't ever come along, then what happens when that good thing does come along? And you've already clogged up your love life trying to rehabilitate a guy who only has 20% of the qualities that you really wanted in a future spouse. And so, yeah, of course, be open to, you know, how God might surprise you and to how a person's personality might be more than what you, you know, had judged at the first date. But in the same respect, you want to be discerning, because you're choosing not only for yourself, but your children, and even for your children's children. So
the next question is, how did you and Jason meet?
I was actually doing prison ministry at the time, and she looked really cute.
He has said that
and orange
for 20 years.
So I wanted to bring she wasn't that bad.
So bad.
We met in the Bahamas during a international chastity conference. I got invited to speak at a 5-day event in Paradise Island of the Bahamas. Like, I need more of those gigs, but that was the only one I ever got. It was basically 5 days of chastity talks for international, you know, different leaders in different communities who wanted to promote abstinence and chastity. And so, you know, Crystal was from Denver at the time, and she flew out to attend the event. And, you know, we met there and just kind of hit it off. And then she moved back to Colorado and I moved back to California, and we had this kind of long distance friendship thing going on for a while. And then she eventually moved out to San Diego. We began working together and spreading the message of chastity. But we met doing what God was calling us to do. We were both in a stage of our life where we're being deliberately single and serving God where he wanted us. So it wasn't so much, is she the one? Is that the one? Is this the one? Chasing after that. It's like, no, chase after God, run after God. It was Curtis Martin said, look, don't run after Miss or Miss Right. Run after God. Run with everything you have. And after a while of running, look to your side and see who's keeping up with you. That's the kind of person you want to end up with. And so when we met, it was because we were doing that in our lives. God, how do you want us to serve you in the church? Through chastity. And when we pursued him and put him first, that's how I think he led us to each other.
And all too often I've heard women ask me, well, what if I don't go out there? What if I end up missing him because I'm not putting myself out there, or I'm not going with my friends here, or going out there, or I'm not on, I don't know, some dating website. What happens if I just don't do that? I'm so scared I may miss him. And that's not how it works. That's not how God's will work in your life. He will lead and guide. As long as you just say yes to what it is he's asking you to do, he has that person for you if you're supposed to be married. Some of you listening have a vocation, and maybe you're ignoring that because you're scared to death of that. And it's not being alone, but you're scared to death to go be with Jesus for the rest of your life. It's a whole different world. But whatever it is he's asking right now, it is so important that you listen. There's nothing more important that you can do in your life than to listen to what it is you know God is asking you to do and to follow through with it, no matter how difficult it may be. With everything going on right now, I think it is so important that we find our strength and our peace in knowing that we're in God's will. And there is such a tremendous peace, just like I said, in that you'll find knowing that God has got your back. He's there for you. He's going to guide you. He's going to give you what you need in that moment.
Yeah. When it comes to fears, you know, when we allow fear to dictate our decisions, then we're really only a very small step away from compromising our most deeply held moral principles and values. Fear cannot be driving the ship. And it's okay to have feelings of fear and bring those to God and talk to him about those fears. But when it comes to aloneness, you know, God has a plan for your life, as Crystal said. The devil also has a plan for your life as well. And so we've got to be making sure that we're carving out that time for God. And when it comes to finding a future husband, make yourself available. You know, maybe your fear isn't that you're going to be alone. Maybe your fear is that you're going to get rejected if you put yourself out there. So you just kind of hide. But be available. And so it's not so much about being passive. You don't want to be passive in this regard. You want to be actively receptive. Some women fall into that passivity of, oh, he'll come. You know, he'll come to me one day. Oh, he'll come. It's like, dude, Ingrid, you're 97 years old. Like, yeah, he'll come. Well, maybe if he works for UPS, he'll come. But other than that, you got to get out there, meet the guy. And so be available. Allow yourself to be pursued. And maybe the thing that you fear the most of rejection because you're not enough or you're too much, you know, requires what you're afraid of the most, which is that vulnerability. But vulnerability is essential in love. There's no way to have love without vulnerability. If we want the love of Christ, we have to open all of our woundedness to him and that vulnerability for him to heal us. And in the same respect, in order to be loved by another, I know when Crystalline and I met, you know, she was afraid. Well, if I ever tell him that, you know, I didn't live this perfect, flawless life before I met him, then he's going to run from me. And what good guy want me if I have that past? It's like, look, if a guy judges you by your past, he's just not that good of a guy. You just want to hold out for a man who can see your future instead of someone who always rubs your nose in your past. And so don't be afraid. You're allowed to have those fears. But like one man I read, he said, courage is not the absence of fear, but rather the judgment that something is more important than your fear. And then next question rolls in. This one was, is sex the physical manifestation of love? And is it true? So as people say, well, is sex the physical manifestation of love? Well, we got to step back a bit from the question. Well, you could say the crucifixion is the physical manifestation of love. St. Maximilian Kolbe giving his life in Auschwitz for a father is a physical manifestation of love. Sometimes sexual intimacy between a husband and wife can be a physical manifestation of love, but so can abstinence with your spouse be a physical manifestation of love, because you're not doing maybe what feels good in the moment instead of you're doing what's best for the individual. Likewise, before you get married, a priest, a religious sister, practicing celibacy through their body, it's a physical manifestation of love. And I remember one guy asking me once, he's like, well, I can't imagine, you know, being in a relationship, you know, where you can't sleep with a girl because then you can't express love in a physical way. And I told him, oh, abstinence is a very physical expression of love. Maybe you don't like abstinence precisely because it's such a physical manifestation of love, that it's an invitation to, why don't you get up here on the cross? Why don't you stay here with Jesus Christ crucified? That is a very physical manifestation of love. Perhaps you're not upset because you can't physically manifest your love. You're upset because you can't physically manifest your lust. And so it's an invitation to come and die. And so, yes, it should be sexual intimacy between a husband and wife should be a renewal of their wedding vows in the flesh. It should be a foretaste of the ecstasy, the bliss, the union of love that awaits our bodies and souls with God in heaven for all eternity. Yeah, it should be all those things. But in order for it to be that, you know, we've got to invite Christ into our own hearts so we can learn how to love rightly through abstinence, through sacrifice. And then we discover that there are many, many ways to physically express our love. And if we don't learn to express love in non-sexual ways outside of the bedroom, we will forever be incapable of expressing true sexual intimacy inside the bedroom.
And marriage really is seasons. You go through the peaks and the valleys, and you really have to just embrace the different seasons of marriage, and chastity really prepares you for that with the different virtues and bringing up your vices. And it's really challenging and hard. And yes, is it going to be unbelievable and wonderful? And you have this other person that you can share all of these things with, but you're also sharing the good, the bad, and the ugly. And so it's not always going to just be this perfect, pristine, I don't know, image that you may have in your head, but that you may have hard times as well. And not to be afraid of that, but it really prepares you and just flexes that muscle and prepares that virtuous muscle that you're going to need within marriage.
Yeah. And if you don't learn that abstinence can be an expression of love outside of marriage, it's going to make for a pretty difficult marriage, because mm-hmm. a lot of people think, oh, I get married and, you know, all bets are off, chastity's over. It's like, no. The virtue of chastity is more challenging to practice inside the sacrament than before it. And now, chastity doesn't mean abstinence, you know, just abstaining from all sexual behavior. It means using this gift of sexuality according to God's plan for my life. And sometimes that does involve abstinence in marriage, and sometimes even to a heroic degree. And sometimes if we can't handle that within marriage, then marriage will start doing what it's supposed to do, meaning sanctifying the individual by bringing your faults up to the surface like oil and water, where maybe you have a spouse who begins to get petulant and whiny and angry and distant and unfaithful because their needs aren't getting met. And then they blame the other spouse for this or that, when there could be some really deeper roots that are getting exposed and wounds that Christ wants to go after to heal. But we just have to have the courage and humility to say, maybe God's doing something, you know, in the wounds of our marriage, that it's wanting to heal us from stuff in the past. And we just have to let Christ, the divine physician, do his work in us.
And the next question is, I believe I am in a toxic relationship and I want to break things off, but I am afraid of being lonely.
You are going to be far more lonely in this relationship mm-hmm. than you would ever be outside of this relationship. The only thing more painful than letting go of a relationship like this is holding on to it for far too long. And so you know it needs to go. You know it needs to end. So what you need is a breakup buddy. You need to find some girl, some guy, you know, whatever, like same-sex friend of yours, whether it's a sister, whether it's a family member, and say, look, I should have let go of this thing before it even began, but it's really turned south, and I'm so afraid that when I feel weak and tempted at 2 o'clock in the morning to text him, I'm going to make a dumb mistake and jump back in. And because a lot of times these relationships, as soon as you start asserting some confidence, some independence, some self-respect, and you start pulling away, it's at that moment that the other person starts being who you've always wanted them to be, which sometimes diffuses your reasons for leaving when it's just a show. It's just like, oh, baby, I'm so sorry I did this. I didn't mean to do that. I'll get better. Oh, okay. Well, I guess I won't break up. Then you wait 2 weeks and it's back to the same old garbage. And so, but if you've got a breakup buddy, someone that you can text of being like, I'm so tempted to text him back right now, you can text them instead. And they can be your backbone when you feel like you don't have one. But don't try to do this alone, letting go of that relationship. You need a safety net. You need someone who's going to encourage you, because you might doubt yourself a lot in this process. But it's like breaking free of alcoholism. I mean, the first few days or weeks, a month from the bottle are going to be the most difficult. You drive by that liquor store and you feel those urges to go in. As time goes on, it's going to be easier. But it's like pulling two magnets apart. The closer they are, the more that the feeling of connection is going to be there. But the more distance you have from this toxic relationship, the more you're going to realize, you know what? I made a really good decision. It hurt. It stung a little bit. But my life is in a better place. But you can't get to that place unless you have the courage to let go of what was never meant to be.
And also be careful of falling into the trap of the lip service of, oh, I'm so sorry, I'll never do it again, or it was a mistake, or I love you so much, yada, 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 right? And then you will know a tree by its fruits. So they're saying one thing, and then there they are flirting with another person that you see, or they're falling right back into those bad habits. That don't fall for that lip service, but really pay attention to a person's actions, because it speaks volumes of where their heart truly is. And not to just say, oh, but he says he's going to change, but he says he loves me. Well, what are his actions saying? Because that doesn't look like love to me. So you know in your heart of hearts, but just have the courage to follow through and just to break it off.
Next question comes in. I love this question. The person asked, isn't chastity just another way of the church not wanting people to understand pleasure so they can exercise power? This is an awesome question. Because what's really going on here is there's such, listen to the wording here, not wanting people to understand pleasure so they can exercise power. This has an underlying concept that what the church really is a bunch of celibate old curmudgeon bishops in Rome who are like wrinkled up like old prunes dictating these rules to ruin my intimate life. When in reality, what if that's not the case? You know, what if the origin of the church's teachings on human sexuality aren't these old grumpy celibate men, but maybe it's coming from the burning heart of the most blessed Trinity who wants to draw us into the most intimate, fiery, powerful love you could ever imagine, and that if you truly understood pleasure as God intended it to be and what it intended to point you to, then you would truly be exercising power of self-mastery. Because it's only through that exercise of power, of self-control, that you can make a gift of yourself in authentic love. And so the church is not afraid of sex because God invented that. I mean, it's the first command he gave to mankind, be fruitful and multiply. After the flood in Noah, it's the first command that he gave to Noah and his family to be fruitful and multiply. That the gift of human sexuality is not the devil's idea. It's God's idea. And the church is not trying to be some divine killjoy of robbing us of pleasure. I mean, we have enough sociological data showing the most sexually satisfied people on the face of the earth are married people who go to church regularly with their faithful partner, whereas the lowest levels of sexual satisfaction are the singles, like you see in the sitcoms proclaiming, oh, this is the life. And in reality, the media's portrayal of human sexuality bears virtually no relationship whatsoever to the truth. And so the truth is that the church does want you to understand pleasure so that you can truly exercise power by having that self-mastery, having self-control, because it's only through that control of yourself that you can make a gift of yourself.
And also, I think a lot of that stems from that the church wants to take something away. God's going to take something away from me, and that your hands are going to be tied and you're not going to be able to do what it is you want to do. And a lot of people don't like that. And before my conversion, that's what I used to think it was going to be, that God was going to take so much away and that I was going to have to follow all of these rules and I was going to be miserable and I would just have to give up so much of my life. And that's not the case. It's just, I gave up so much of a filthy, dirty life that I was living in. It was horrible. And that God gave me a new life and nothing was taken away, but so much was given that I didn't realize just what I was holding on to compared to what God wanted to do in my life. So don't hold on to those things and think God's going to just take everything away. No, he wants to do amazing, great things with you, but he can't do that if you're holding on to the wounds or the past or the ways of the world, but to just let it go and just see what God wants to do. And it doesn't matter what age you are, whatever age you are listening right now, God wants to use you. He wants to do great things with you. And don't say, oh, I'm too old or I'm too young or I just have too much going on. I don't have the time. If God is asking you, he will provide everything for you to do it.
And the next question comes in, was the church's view on chastity developed due to the lack of contraceptive methods in the past? No. In fact, contraception is older than the gospel itself. Contraception has been practiced for thousands of years. If you look at ancient Egyptian papyrus, they would talk about how they would use crocodile dung as a contraceptive. They would fumigate, centuries later, a woman's uterus with smoke to cause her to be temporarily sterile. In the Middle Ages, they would have women swallow potions, oral contraceptives in the Middle Ages that contained things like lead, mercury, arsenic, and strychnine. It's probably pretty effective as a contraception because it kills the lady, then you know, can't really conceive. But they would have superstitious forms of contraception where the woman would wear an amulet around her neck to dissuade fertility from coming. These amulets would contain things like the liver of a cat and the earwax of a mule, which is probably pretty effective because I don't know how interested I'd be if you're wearing cat liver. But, you know, so this was going on for centuries. And so this is long before even the gospel came into that people were trying to figure out a way that they could have physical intimacy without having babies. We already had something that worked 100% of the time. It was called abstinence. People didn't want to do that. And so they wanted to find a way to manipulate the body of a woman to make her available without the natural consequences of life-giving love, thus the origins of contraception. The earliest Jews were against it. All of the early church fathers of Christianity were extremely opposed to contraception because it was present at the time of Christ in the Roman culture. Early Christian writings are unanimous against it. The Protestant reformers, Calvin, Zwingli, Luther, read what they said on contraception. It is more, antagonistic against contraception than anything you'll ever hear from a pulpit in a Catholic church. And those are the Protestant reformers. And so through all 1900 years of Christianity, there was a unanimous voice against it until 1930. And the Anglicans had a conference where they said, well, you could use it if you're married in extreme circumstances. And after that, eventually, at least within Protestantism, the floodgates opened, whereas only the Catholic Church has historically stood true to its teachings on this subject. But there's much more that we could dive into on that topic. But I encourage you, check out chastity.com, because we've got lots of information there on the topic of contraception and how to explain why the Church teaches what she teaches regarding it.
Okay, we have time for one more question. How do I believe in love and marriage when I look around and mainly see failed examples of love? That is all I grew up seeing, is failed examples of love to my grandfather, through my aunts, my uncles, my own father left. And let it stop with you. And a lot of that, you probably need some healing and adoration time with God to kind of help you redirect what that is supposed to look like, the right ordered way of what real love should look like in marriage. And I remember I didn't see a really good, healthy, intact marriage, honestly, until I met Jason's parents, which is really sad that it took that long, but it was just nothing but distortion all around me. And when you actually do see it and it's authentic, it's unbelievable and it's beautiful. But don't think that's all there is, but that God wants to give you so much more, and that you can have that beautiful, holy, good marriage and that spouse that's going to be there with you through thick and thin. But just because that's how it was doesn't mean that that's how it has to be for you.
Yeah. You know, and so God gave you these desires, like I said, for a reason, you know, and if you ache for this beautiful family, it exists. It can be out there. And obviously you have to overcome a lot of fears that, well, maybe if I really give my heart and I go all in, that eventually this is going to turn sour and I'm going to get burned. You know what? It's a risk you're going to need to take. John Paul II would always say to the young people that were camping with him, and they'd ask him these deep relationship questions, in the end, he would always say, but you must choose. You must be that final agent, you know, using your free will to make your decision. And so base that on prayer, discernment, trusting the people who love you, but make your choice wisely, not compromising. But as I had said earlier, keeping your standards as high as heaven.
Well, that's all we have time for. I can't thank you so much to my husband, Jason Everett, for being here. I hope I can have you back again soon.
It would be an honor to be back.
And I want to also tell you about my husband's new podcast that he has. Tell him a little bit about that.
Yeah, it's actually called Lust is Boring. And the reason we went with that name is kind of like that call, that question we got earlier. You know, isn't the church's rules all about this and that? It's like, no, God's plan for human love is everything that you ache for. And so it's on Apple Podcast, on Spotify, on Google Podcast. So just type in my name, Jason Everett, or just type in Lust is Boring. And we've got weekly shows that talk about parenting, dating, marriage, chastity, courtship, all that kinds of stuff. And so you can subscribe to the podcast and we'll be putting out content weekly.
So remember, if you need any information or you are looking for all things Catholic, you can go to EWTN.com. And if you want to know more about my website, Women Made New, you go to womenmadenew.com. And also the other ministry that we have is chastityproject.com or chastity.com. And if you could please keep me and my family in your prayers, and know that I will be praying for your family. And Women Made New is all about women helping women. And together, we can be women made new as long as we do it through God and trust in what He's asking us to do. Until next week, God bless.